talk about Remagen tonight because my outfit was there. And I thought before we hit Remagen itself, I'd give you a little background of what led up to Remagen. When the First Army cracked through the Siegfried Line, they hit, suppose this was a map of the Rhine Plain. This is the north, this is the south. They hit a barrier here, the Roer River, R-O-E-R, and the Hurricane Forest. And they got stuck in there, because that was really tree-to-tree fighting, and it was very heavy fighting. And next to this, on the right flank, there were some dams, the Schmidt dams up here, which could flood this whole valley if they broke them. So there was a heavier fighting even to the right flank of the Hurricane Forest to try to catch them, stop the Germans from flooding the valley. And this was a very messy fighting, and there was a lot of losses, and nothing really was accomplished too much. The Germans did finally manage to open the sluice gates and flood the Roer, R-O-E-R, not the R-U-H-R, they sound alike, the R-O-E-R Valley, which stopped our army, First Army there, all through February, January, February. They had to wait till spring for these waters to recede so that we could get through there. My outfit wasn't there yet. We came in when they finally, the waters were receding and we were getting ready to attack. Now what Ike did was instead of attacking straight on, he started up here around, there were a bunch of little towns here, Zurich, Jülich, Düren, and so on. He started here and he sent his troops over. And when they got over and got a foothold, they'd come down and clear the bank for the next guys. They'd come over, clear the bank, and we kept doing this till finally we got to this main road here, which was opposite where we were. There was no bridge on the Roer, but they had, in destroying the bridge, they had left a sort of a brick column. There were columns of the old bridge that were still standing. So we threw a 250-foot bridge across there, Bailey Bridge, and managed to put across that bridge three divisions, two infantry divisions, I think the 9th was one of them, and the 9th Armored Division. This becomes an important part of the saga. So we finally put these three divisions across, and this is the Rhine Plain. And here we're coming across the Rhine Plain, and we're coming to the Rhine. Up to the north, the British were getting all set for their big show. Montgomery had their force, paratroopers, navy, what all. I think he may have had some submarines. Down to the right of us, Patton was having a lot of trouble breaking through the German line around Trier. He was trying to capture Trier, and this was the Palatinate down there. It was a very hilly country, because to the right of us, the ground rose again. We were sort of on a plain here, ground rose again, and he was over there trying to come through. When we broke through, we sort of stripped the flank of the Germans, so that they finally had to pull back from in front of Patton. So we had a general movement coming this way. But our orders were passed down quietly, not to make too much of a show, because Montgomery wanted to make a big splash, and we weren't supposed to, you know, get in his way. So don't try to attack the Rhine. Just kind of drift across the plain, the Rhine plain, and line up on the Rhine. But don't try to get across, because the big show is going to come up to the north. Well, anyway, we get these two divisions. One of the infantry is coming this way. The other infantry division is coming this way. Here comes the 9th Armor. Down here was a sort of a valley and a little river that curved around and came into the Rhine. So we were sort of on a little height. You had this valley, and then you had the height of the Palatinate. 9th Armor Combat Command B was fooling around, and we were just what we call reconnaissance in force. We didn't attack, but we kept pushing along. And finally, as a recon officer, I was always up with some of the troops to find out if they needed anything. So I'd be following either the infantry or the combat or the armor, whichever happened to be around. So this day, they're fooling around here, and they suddenly start finding that there's nobody bothering them. And they start drifting down and drifting down, and all of a sudden, here they are on the Rhine. And by God, there's a bridge standing there. But this was just a combat command. There wasn't really a lot of troops. So they managed to take the town, brought in more of the 9th Armored, didn't have any artillery, they lined up the tanks as artillery on the river. The Germans, you could see the Germans across the river. And some guy decided, well, let's see if we can scoot across that bridge. And they did. They scooted across the bridge. And luckily, they managed to get across it. Now, the Remagen Bridge was very much like the Hell Gate Bridge in New York. It was a railroad bridge. And it ended in a big rock with a tunnel. So when these fellows went across, there was no road. They had to climb up the rock to get to high ground. So they were climbing up the rock, and the Germans were shooting at them from the riverbank, and they were having a terrible time. But they managed to cling up there. So then we started bringing more and more people in, and we finally started to get a few people off the rock into the lowland on the other side of the river. In other words, we were across here, but we were trying to get these Germans out of the way up and down this riverbank. But it wasn't giving us enough people. So when we finally cleared enough of the riverbank to throw in some bridges, there was a set of engineers that threw in, this was, let's say that the Remagen Bridge was here. On this side, we threw in a treadway tank bridge. On this side, we threw in a ponton truck bridge. So we could forget the Remagen Bridge, because after all, what had happened, it was a railroad bridge, there was no roadbed to it, so somebody had thrown down, either the Germans or us, it looked like the back doors of troop carriers over the ties, so that the reels could roll. You couldn't get a lot of things over that. So we weren't really using the bridge much after the first couple of days when we'd rushed infantry across to get on the other side. And we started using these main bridges, this one on the north side for the tanks and this one on the south side for all other vehicles, and started coming in. So what happened then, we started building a bridgehead 10 miles deep. Bradley started sending us divisions, and we had lots and lots of people coming in here. This bridgehead was really packed. I think we had something like five divisions in there. We were probably sitting on each other. But we kept pushing, till we finally got a nice bridgehead. Eventually, we were ready to break out. So the night before the breakout, The liaison officer from my battalion that went to the general's headquarters for the briefing so he'd come back to battalion and tell us what we were going to do, decided he wanted to go to Paris for R&R. So they sent me in to see to the general's quarters. So Van Fleet was the general, and he was sitting here. He was on the opposite bank of the Rhine. He had his war tent right there on the bank of the Rhine. And we sit there. Never forget, the G2 is briefing us. And all these German units that were facing us, you know, we really didn't have any whole German units anymore by that time. There were sort of pieces of units with the name of a commander and all kinds. It was a whole hodgepodge of people. So he's going through all this list. He's got all these nice little maps on, little flags on there, and little colored crayons. And he's got his wand waving at it. He says, "Well, gentlemen," he says, "when we attack in the morning, we'll be facing about 78,000 Germans." So we attacked in the morning, went through, 3rd Armor, we came through, and 3rd Armor was the big heavyweight. 3rd Armor comes through, they start swinging north to meet 9th Army. Coming down from the north to encircle the Ruhr, the big industrial heart of Germany. Meanwhile, Montgomery has launched his show, so his people are heading from that side. So we've got the Germans more or less trapped in the Ruhr. By the time we got through, from 78,000, we ended up with 330,000 prisoners. We didn't know what to do with these people. We'd shove them in trucks, start the truck up, and when they all slam and hit the brake, when they all slam forward, we'd pile some more in there and sent them down the road. We didn't have enough GIs to take care of them. We had even German sergeants putting them on the trucks with a GI driver to take these guys back to the cages, because we didn't have the people to take care of them. We had so many of them. And the Germans are funny. When they take the helmet off, the regular Wehrmacht isn't as aggressive as they are with their steel helmets on. I saw, for example, a German sergeant. We were sending our tanks up this road, it was coming around here, trying to close this gap. And these trucks with German prisoners were coming down, blocking the road. This German sergeant hops up and he's screaming at his people to get the hell off the road, let those tanks through. So I almost fell off my Jeep laughing. So that's how we finally got out of Remagen. And attacks on us while we were there, those 10 days in the bridgehead, were ferocious. We had air raids. We had frogmen. We had 8 frogmen that we caught. The way we caught them, we alongside these 2 side bridges. We had barbed wire down in the water. We had flashlights, big lights on the water. And this way we managed to spot 8 of them and caught them. We had rocket attacks, V-2 rocket attack. I was out one day, and my B company commander said, Rip, why don't you come on up and have chow with us? Because you're always out, you know, you're roaming around. I said, okay, and Captain Henry. So he was up on the hill up here. This was the Rhine. And we were up on this hill, on Company B was up on this hill. Way above the hill was a church. So I wind up and get to Company B, and Henry says, well, he says, we're not ready for chow yet. He says, how about coming up and seeing that church? So I said, fine. So we walk up, we climb up the hill, these old vineyards around, these Rhine wine. And we get up to the church, and I turn around, and I look down, and I'm looking down the slope, and I see this flash in the sky. And all of a sudden, Company Command, B Company Command Post, goes up in smoke. It was a direct hit on our command post. We spent the rest of the day picking guys out of there. About 6 were killed. It was a hell of a mess. So finally, when we finished closing this around the Ruhr, our Third Army contacted Ninth Army. Then Bradley started sending us divisions to make a wall. And we put these divisions in place and closed the Ruhr. When we finished that, Patton decided that he was going to go after Berchtesgad, the Hitler's Erie. So they took our outfit, swung us around, sent us all the way down south again to Patton's army, and we joined with his army, and he went in and attacked Nuremberg, and we took Nuremberg, went through Nuremberg, went over to Danube, and went all the way down to Berchtesgaden. And that was our Morgan adventure.
Wasn't it true that as soon as everybody, like, you know, they secured the bridge at Remagen and they got across, you know, the Germans had tried to dynamite it, wasn't that right?
They had charges on it, and some of the charges didn't work. Some did, so the bridge was damaged. I remember when I went over the bridge, I went over the next morning, I could still see the Germans down there aiming their guns at us. And in fact, 6 of their damn rounds went over my head through the bridge, and 6 went over my head coming back, and my fingerprints are still in that Jeep, I'm sure. Because I tell you, I was so damn scared, I was beyond being scared, because you were helpless. You know, you're sitting there in a Jeep and this stuff's coming at you and there's nothing you can do. You either get hit or you don't. And you could see those guys. They were just lousy gunners, I think. But when we had men on there trying to fix it, we never really used it much after the first couple of days, I said. Then one afternoon, she simply collapsed. I think a lot of it was due from the few charges that went off. A lot of it probably went due from the effects of a lot of the bombing that wasn't a direct hit, but the shock of the bombs must have had a lot to do with it. See, so it was really one of those things, you know, one of those crazy things. Some guy, one guy drowns, and the other guy in a 2.5-ton truck is stuck there with his nose up in the air and his tail in the water, and he's all right. So you never know. Yes.
What was the ground opposition on the east side of the Rhine here?
Well, as I said, it's most of these scattered groups. There was no whole divisions by that time. Some captain or some colonel or something would accumulate it. For example, you had the group Mueller. This guy Mueller always was showing up here and there and everywhere with this, with probably a couple of battalions of people. And that's the kind of opposition you had.
But it
wasn't too organized. But still, it would catch you by surprise. For example, when the 3rd Division went up that way, there was nobody there. We were really in open country. And the commander of the 3rd Division went through a little woods and got killed because there just happened to be a few Germans showing up. Now, I was running along parallel to the 3rd Division, and I captured a little town all by myself because there wasn't anybody there. I rolled into the damn place, you know, and I came out of it in one piece. I found out later that there were 12 armed Germans in the house that I passed, and they thought I was some sort of decoy, so they didn't bother me. They told the guys later. So I walked into that town, and the people stopped me, and some woman came up. It was a nice little Bavarian town, had all this wood piled up under the trees. The Germans were very neat. Their woods were always very neat. And she says, she could speak English. She says, "Lieutenant," she says, "it's cold." She says, "and we can't get that wood." She says, "could you tell the Burgermeister to get the wood, to give us the wood so we can warm ourselves?" It was March. It was late March. We were still pretty chilly. So I said, "sure." So I roll into the Burgermeister, and the guy could speak a little English. So I said, "the people are asking for the wood. How about getting some?" Oh, he says, "Lieutenant, I'm sorry." He says, "I can't do anything unless I get orders from Hitler." I said, "well," I said, "I've got news for you. You're not going to be hearing much from Hitler from now on."
Say, you put a 286-foot Bailey Bridge across that river?
That Raw River, yeah.
What was your maximum span?
I think from the shore to the
pier
was about half of the 250.
Boy, you must have had a Bailey Bridge we didn't have in the Pacific.
Well, we had to double span it, you know, double side it and so on. But it did the trick. And what we want to do is get those guys over. We got them over. But basically, in combat engineering, that's what we do, is mostly stuff for the moment, you know, to get them over. After that, the other guys come in and do the more.
Best job engineering I ever did in my life was a bridge I didn't build. I talked them out of it.
There you go.
Wasn't that bridge called the Eric Ludendorff Bridge? You know,
But they had a lot of people in the area, because I remember when I came around that corner, coming down that hill and coming around that corner up to the Rhine, this road was just full of Germans marching back on their own to the rear.
What was the length of that tunnel that the railroad went in?
I don't know. I never fooled with the damn thing, you know. We found some dead German wax in there, but I don't think we ever went through it much. We went around it.
To build a bridge where you had to go through a tunnel instead of someplace else?
Well, it was a railroad bridge, and apparently, you know, it just required cutting through that rock. It was a big rock wall, and they just cut through the rock. It wasn't really a tunnel. It was a cut through the rock, through this huge rock wall.
The German commanding officer of the defense of the bridge was executed.
He was shot. Yeah. Before I quit, on D-Day, how many people know that we trained for D-Day down here at off the Lantana Village on Dog Island?
Lanark Village.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, because before I got in the engineers, I had a very varied military career. I started out as an infantryman, went into the medics because they found out I was an actuary, and when I was drafted to New York that night, the sergeant says, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm an actuary." He says, "What's that?" I said, "Well, it's like a statistician." He says, "Well, I can spell statistician." I said, "Well, then put it down." So one day, I was down in this Camp Cross, South Carolina, and I was on bayonet training. I was training the guys in a bayonet course. I was around the second round of training. And the sergeant came over. He said, "Rip, are you sick?" I said, "No." He says, "Well, the hospital wants to see you." So it was like July, August in South Carolina. We were sweating like pigs. So I had this helmet on. I woke up the hill, and I go to the hospital. And there's these guys sitting around in suntans, fans, ice-cold Coca-Colas. And the sergeant major says, "How would you like to work here?" I said, "Don't be silly. Move over. What do you mean?" So I ended up, and I couldn't get out of there because I knew how to handle the statistics. And the adjutant, who was an old army man from the Philippines, he'd fought the Moros. I don't think that guy had any skin. I think he was all leather. He was just tough as nails. He says, "You're not going anywhere." He says, "You're the only guy that's been making out these reports where the headquarters is a jumping on me." He says, "Forget it." And I didn't get out of there until he finally was promoted and gotten transferred. And he made me everything. I ended up one step from Master Sergeant. So I said to my wife, I said, look, I said, there's a war going on. I'm not going to sit here forever. I said, the first OCS that comes through, I don't know what it is, I'm going. So the engineer OCS came through and I went. And while I was in the hospital, just to come back, I was sort of in the front office administration. We used to get calls for what they call cadres. You'd pick out people from your staff and send them down to start a new place. So we got the call for this hospital down here in Lonoc Village, which was, I thought it was Hiram Johnson or something like that. Gordon Johnson. So we sent the cadre down for the hospital. That's why I happen to know about the hospital and the training area down there. Well, thank you for having me, folks.